Welcome to Foundation of One by Danny and Claire. Welcome to Duchess of Emo. Hosted by Danny and Claire.
Welcome to Foundations of Emo, hosted by Claire and Danny. Each episode we take one of our favourite bands and dive deep into their history and origins, reminiscing on our own emo roots along the way.
Hello.
Hello.
Welcome. Happy Wednesday. It's actually Sunday, but this comes out on Wednesday. So.
Yeah, so happy Wednesday to everyone listening. How are you?
Grand, it's really because we've just had the chats and it's like, oh, now we have to have them again and pretend we didn't.
There wasn't really that much podcast relevant stuff that we were talking about.
No, there was something we did not talk about the last time. Oh, yeah. Is it Seosin and Anthony Green? Didn't I send you that thing where he's like, oh, gone now again? And it's the other singer.
No, you didn't tell me that.
I think I did. I think I sent you a tweet about it.
No, no.
Or else I'm getting this.
I don't read my messages from Claire, so.
Hey. That's the only music-related music.
Well, no, you went to an emo brunch.
Sorry, I went to an emo brunch. It was... I don't know what was emo about it. There was music, except there was a DJ who was probably the least emo person I've ever seen in my life. But we asked him to play Hawthorne Heights, and he'd never heard of them.
At an emo brunch?
Yeah.
Hawthorne Heights.
Excuse me?
Like the biggest emo song of all time.
Yeah. So I think eventually Joanne just like connected her Spotify. I have a feeling that happened. But we drank way too much Prosecco. But we got our money's worth, so it was very good. I made some new friends. Hello, if you're listening. I doubt you are because I was talking absolute shite, but anyway.
Claire texted me at one stage and was like, oh, damn, I should have brought podcast stickers. I'm the worst ever. And I was out with my daughter. We were at the Lego exhibition. And I was like, oh, don't worry about it, whatever. And then a few minutes later, she texts me again and she goes, so I've just like talked to loads of people and got loads of followers on Instagram. And I was like, what are you talking about? She's like, I just told random people about the podcast. I was like, oh, so you're like very drunk.
Yeah, it must have been so irritating. I say people were like, who is your one? I was like, hey guys, so I take it because you're like Emma. So like, we have a podcast. We all listen to it. Give us a follow. Okay, bye. But they were really nice and receptive. There's one group of people who weren't, but whatever, we won't talk about them.
They're not here anyway, so you can say what you want about them.
Exactly. And another group, and we were like, we'll see you at Green Day. Because we're going to Green Day. So I made friends. Yeah, that's cool.
That's good.
They're from Carlo, I think, if I remember. I was very drunk.
Oh my god. Like, so did they travel up for the emo brunch? Traveling all this way to go to an emo brunch and it's not even emo.
But you see, it's reminiscent of the days where you travel all the way to go to an emo band because they only played Dublin.
Yeah, no, I understand traveling up, but I just feel like...
I understand the concept of travel, Claire. That's how it works.
I understand that people outside of Dublin sometimes have to travel to Dublin to come to these things. But I just mean to come to an emo brunch where they don't even know who Hawthorne Heights is.
I know. Now, the rest of the music they're playing was pretty good, to be fair.
Okay.
Yeah. There's some awesome hairstyles there as well.
Oh, cool. Did people like dress up?
So I don't know if they were dressed up or if it was their normal clothes. Like, you know.
Is that a costume or a way of life? Hard to know.
You know what I mean?
Shall we get into it?
Yes, let's go for it.
I'm kind of afraid it's going to be a long episode, which is why I'm anxious to get started. There's a lot to talk about.
Okay.
Today we're talking about The Ghost Inside. Did you know anything about them before
Literally,
this?
Literally, nope. Nothing. Not a thing. Not one thing.
Okay. That's good. As I said last time that we talked, that this is kind of a positive one. It's kind of about a triumph over tragedy, yeah. Shall we say. That's some lyrics from one of their songs. So there we go.
Okay.
So let's get started. So in 2004, metalcore band A Dying Dream formed in El Segundo, California, comprising of vocalist Jonathan Vigil, guitarist Aaron Brooks, Josh Navarro and Ryan Romero, bassist Tyler Watamanuk, and drummer Anthony Rivera. Under this name, they released an EP called Now or Never through Frontline Records, a Christian rock label based in California. When the following year, they signed to Media Scare Records, an indie label focused on heavy metal, and re-recorded and re-released the EP with an additional track and bonus footage. So in 2006, there were some lineup changes, leaving Jonathan Vigil on vocals, Aaron Brooks on lead guitar, and Tyler Watamanuk on bass, while onboarding Sawyer Cole on rhythm guitar and Casey Stockbridge on drums. Shortly after that, they changed their name to The Ghost Inside, and in April 2008, they released their first full-length album, Fury and the Fallen Ones, through Media Scare. So just to say, I actually googled why do they change their name.
Yeah.
And I think they basically just thought A Dying Dream didn't represent them because they were doing really, really well. And then they were like, A Dying Dream sounds so negative and everything. So, I mean, not that A Ghost Inside is a very positive name,
so
but
optimistic.
They just felt like it didn't really represent them. So there's nothing very exciting.
Scandalous.
Okay. I was listening to a couple of podcasts about them, and they were so focused on touring all the time. They had this really cool mindset that I've never really thought about before, that they were like, if they were supporting a band and say there was like 500 people in the crowd, they were like, if we could get 10% of those people to like our band, that's 50 new followers in that city. And then in the next city we go to, another 50. And that's, they were like really trying to build a really strong fan base. And they toured like extensively at this time.
Smart.
But I just thought that was really cool.
Yeah.
To do with the Fury and the Fallen Ones album, AllMusic claimed, it isn't remarkable, but generally decent. They say that the album is mildly inconsistent and less than distinctive, but has more pluses than minuses. And advised that the band is one to keep an eye on. Did you listen to this album?
So it's the first album.
Yeah.
I did, yeah. Do you remember I texted you?
Yeah. So Claire just texted me and said, what the fuck are you making me listen to?
No, I believe I said, what kind of shit are you making me listen to? It's just the first song on the first album, and I was like,
it's very screamy.
Yeah. No, I don't know why. I just was like, this is going to be a lot for me to listen to if every single song is like this. But it wasn't, so it was okay.
Okay. Because I hadn't really listened to them before. I'd heard one or two songs and I thought I liked them, but I hadn't listened to them like extensively.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually really enjoyed listening to them. All of, like, from the start, even from this album, I was like, okay, I like this. Have a little bop.
Okay.
So in June 2010, they released their second studio album, Returners, through MediaScare. It was recorded in the Brick Hit House in Massachusetts and produced by the owner, Shane Frisbee, which is an excellent
name.
It charted at number 50 on the US indie chart, and Sputnik Music reviewed it and stated, so basically what we have here is an album with issues, but once it picks up momentum, it doesn't stop. When it gets to that point, the weak beginning is easily forgivable, and you'll forget all about it by the time the record is over. Sure, this band doesn't cover any new ground, but they're damn good at what they do, and they've got heart.
I kind of feel like that's how I felt. Weak beginning. But you know, then got into it.
Returners was like one of their kind of bigger, or like most popular with the fans kind of album, I think. So in February 2011, they announced that drummer Casey Stockbridge mutually parted ways with the band, and Andrew Saksik, nope, that's definitely wrong, former drummer and songwriter in For the Fallen Dreams, had been filling in on drums. In January 2012, they signed to Epitaph Records and headlined the Alternative Press Tour with Miss May I. They stated that Epitaph was their dream label, as it was started by Brett Gurewitz from the band Bad Religion. In June 2012, they released their third studio album, Get What You Give, their first release through Epitaph. They said that at the time, everybody was doing screaming verses, melodic choruses, and they wanted to steer away from that trend. They were happy that Epitaph gave them that freedom and never tried to push them in a particular direction.
I love that trend, though.
But you know what? Like, when I first started listening to them, I was like, kind of wish they did a bit more singing, though.
That's why I was saying earlier that I think these bands, it's not that I don't like them. I can appreciate the music. And when I listen to it, it's not that I'm like, oh my God, this is totally awful. But I can't sing along.
Yeah, yeah.
And I love singing along. So it's very, you know.
I found, because there are bands that like just do a lot of screaming and don't have any singing. And I sometimes I find like it's too much. But I found like they are quite melodic.
Yeah.
Like outside of the screaming, it is melodic, the music. So I think you can still kind of have a little bop to it, even though he's screaming. So I found them a lot more palatable than other bands that scream a lot. And then they have, like, later on in the career, some of the songs are more singing as well. So they were happy that Epitaph gave them that freedom and never tried to push them in a particular direction. Then they wrote the song Engine 45 and realised it had the melodic chorus that they were trying to avoid. But they kind of, I listened to an interview with them about it, and they were saying, like, it couldn't have been any other way. Like, just that was the way the song had to be with singing in it. The album was recorded in the Wade Studio, if you recall, in Ocala, Florida, and was produced by A Day to Remember's vocalist, Jeremy McKinnon.
Why do I have to recall that?
Because I presume that's where he recorded all his music. But it came up on previous episodes, the Wade Studio.
Oh.
The inner CD case states that it's dedicated to vocalist Jonathan Vigil's brother, Ryan. I actually meant to Google, like, what happened.
Did he die?
But I don't know.
Oh.
I did not Google. I got carried away with the rest of the story. It peaked at number 8 on the Billboard Top Hard Rock Albums and number 88 on the Billboard 200. They then went on a world tour throughout 2013 to promote it. This was the peak of their career.
Can confirm he is dead.
Vigil's brother, that is. Claire Googled it and it just says he died, but it doesn't say how. Yeah. So So in September 2014, Spotify leaked details of their forthcoming album, Dear Youth, which was later released through Epitaph in November. I thought that was really weird. Just Spotify leaked
it? Yeah, how did they leak it?
I don't know if they, like, post about it maybe before they were supposed to or something. Yeah, probably, I don't know. Yeah, yeah. It seems strange. This album was also produced by Jerry McKinnon alongside Andrew Wade of Void Studios. It peaked at number 6 on the Billboard Top Hard Rock Albums and number 63 on the Billboard 200. It spawned two major singles, Avalanche and Dear Youth, 52. In brackets. I don't know. How else do you say that? During the writing of this album, the band state that there was huge turmoil between the members and guitarist Aaron Brooks. They stated that they were tired from constant touring and a little jaded with life in the band, and it all came to a head at this time. They said the album is about how they felt that they were stuck in life. Everyone around them was buying houses, getting married, having kids, and they were all on the road touring and coming home to their parents' houses. They said they felt stuck at 20 years of age, the age they were when they started the band.
Aww.
Yeah.
That's sad.
And they were, like, they were touring so extensively and heavily from the time that they started. So literally, like, 10 years, basically, they were touring.
And coming home to their parents.
And yeah, and then going home to live with mum and dad. Which, you know, if you live in Ireland.
Yeah, story of my life. It's
like, yeah, you know, that's just how it is. But in America, you can move out of your parents' house. It's weird. It's this concept.
Oh, wow.
Strange here. Yeah. Did you like this album?
I did. I particularly like the song Avalanche.
Mm.
That's one of the ones Ryan actually sent me and was like, listen to this one. Good.
I found Dear Youth was a lot more, like, it's softer, kind of. Like, there was a lot more singing and stuff like that on it. When I was listening to it, I think it was Avalanche and Dear Youth were like, I took my phone out to be like, what's the name of this one?
Yeah.
And then it turned out they were the big singles. And I was like, oh, I see why. Because they stood out to me as well. So in January 2015, they announced on Facebook that they were parting ways with founding member and lead guitarist Aaron Brooks, leaving Jonathan Vigil as the last remaining original member.
Aww.
November 2015, the band were on the Local Onlys tour around the US. This was a cool tour where they kind of contacted bands in different cities, like bands that were from different cities.
Mm.
And when they were playing a home show, they'd go and play with them.
Oh, that's cool.
So they were just touring with all these different, touring, but like doing gigs with all these different bands in the areas. So they stayed up late after the show on their tour bus, watching a Star Wars marathon in preparation for seeing the new movie, Return of the Jedi. They are just a bunch of nerds, like. And in the early hours of the morning of November 19th, 2015, the band were finally asleep on the tour bus, traveling between concerts from Lubbock, Texas to Phoenix, Arizona. With only 4 shows left in the Locals Only tour, the tour bus collided with a tractor trailer. The drivers of both vehicles died. All 5 members of the band and all 5 members of the crew that were traveling with them sustained serious injuries.
Well, I thought you were about to say all 5 members of the band died, and I was like...
And that's the end of the episode.
I thought you said this was like a nice story.
Yeah, well, it's intense for a bit.
Jesus.
I've seen pictures of the crash. Like, they crashed. They crashed. Basically, what happened was the tire blew out on the bus.
Mm.
And the driver was trying to slow the bus down to stop it, but it careened into the next lane, and then there was a head-on collision between that and the truck.
Oh, the poor driver.
Yeah. So the 2 drivers died.
Oh.
And all the lads were on the bus.
All the lads.
All the lads. But it was the 5 band members and 5 members of the crew, and it's really cute because they now refer to themselves as the 10. So 3 days later, the bassist Jim posted an update which was shared on the official The Ghost Inside Instagram. It said, "Hey all, Jim here offering a quick update. The last 48 hours have seen everyone's condition improve. We are surrounded by lots of loved ones and the vibe today is very positive. Asking again that you keep sending good juju our way and keep the families of the 2 drivers that lost their lives in your thoughts. It'll be a few more days before we share any individual details. If you've seen any of the pictures that are floating around, you know the serious nature of the situation, and I hope you understand the need for a little privacy and discretion. The doctors here are phenomenal and we're in the most capable of hands. Thank you, thank you, thank you for the love and support. Life is swinging hard. We're swinging harder."
Oh, God.
So basically all the fans knew was like what they were seeing on the news.
Yeah.
Because obviously it was all over the news because it was a massive crash.
Mm-hmm.
And then they heard, like, they were naming the band and everything on the news reports.
Yeah.
And that's all everyone knew. This was the first, like, update that anybody heard about it. So November 19th was the crash. And then the 1st of December, the guitarist Zach posted to Instagram, said, "Some of you may have read updates about our bus accident on the 19th. It was tragic, scary, something I can't put into words. Nothing can compare with the loss of our driver, Greg, and the other, Stephen. As far as the band and crew go, we're making steps in the right direction. I don't want to give details on the other guys as that's their business. I've had about 26 hours of surgery fixing my feet, legs, hips, and might have another to go. I've never been happier to be breathing."
Jesus.
I know, it's so intense.
Yeah.
And I listened to a podcast. It's really, really good. It's called 1333 Days. Mm-hmm. And it's a 4-part podcast series talking to the guys about the accident. And it's so intense. Like, yeah. I was on the bus I was like, in a zone. I was like, fuck, listening to it. So a few days later, Yumi at Six announced a benefit show for the guys from TGI featuring support from Deaf Ivana and Your Demise, who were formed especially for the show after splitting in 2014. Yumi at Six stated that all funds raised at the gig in the Underworld Camden would go towards the medical bills and funeral costs for the guys.
Oh, fair play to them. That's so real cute. Nice of them.
And like all the guys were posting this on their Instagrams and being like, oh my God, thank you so much for doing this. Like, they were so nice.
That's so nice.
So in January 2016, so a month later, the vocalist Vigil posted his first update via Instagram since the accident. He said, after scars on my head, a fracture on my neck, a wound on my back, skin graft right elbow, ligament damage on my knee, broken tooth and 2 broken ankles, I'm here, world. Glad I'm alive. There's very little information about this online, so that's why I kind of went on a deep dive into the guys' Instagrams. Mm. But what really hit me was, like, how positive they all were.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, the end of every post is like, I'm here, like, we're good. You know what I mean? And imagine, just fucking imagine, like, insane. The next day, drummer Andrew confirmed via his Instagram account that the accident had resulted in him having his right leg amputated above the knee following a medically induced 10-day coma. He said, not going to let it stop me. I don't care what anyone says. It's a long road ahead, but I will play drums again. Can't wait to get back on the kit.
Oh my God, that must be so hard. And like the drummer to lose his leg.
That's it.
Could have been anyone else.
Yeah.
Could have hopped about the place, but not really him.
Yeah. The drummer to lose a leg. And their music is very like double bass.
Yeah, yeah.
And just to not have a leg.
And still be so positive about it.
Yeah. It's so cute and it's so heartwarming. And that's why I'm like, this is like a positive story, even though it's actually coming out of tragedy. And then a few days later, Zach posted again showing how both of his toes had been amputated.
Oh.
They're just losing body parts left, right and centre.
Yeah.
Vigil shared a statement from their label Epitaph advising that all profits from sales of the Ghost Inside albums worldwide would be given to the band directly to support them.
Aww.
So they actually said Epitaph were amazing at this time.
That's so good, yeah.
I heard on the podcast they were saying that like the manager of the band didn't know what to do because obviously it's not something you get trained in when you're a band manager. Like, what happens if the band crashes
and they're all limbs?
And they're all in hospital. And what they did was they, first of all, the first thing they did was fly their families out because their families were living in different parts all over the country and they were in a hospital in Texas, I'm pretty sure. So they flew the families directly to the hospital to be there for them.
That's so good.
And then there were so many parents and like family members around. So it was like kind of overwhelming. So they got a woman who does tour managing or something like that. They actually got her to like manage the families, basically. Aww. So to make sure that they all had food and like stuff like that. Vans were really good. Like the vans, clothing, were really good to them and said like, go to our outlet store and like the families can get whatever they want so that they're clothed. Because like a lot of the families just like walked out the door and got into the car and wasn't thinking about like packing or how long am I going to be in Texas or anything like that. And Vans were like,
that's so nice.
Get whatever.
Yeah.
The support, I think, is amazing that they got. At the end of January, Vigil posted about standing on his own for the first time in 2.5 months. In February 2016, bands such as Let Live and Bleeding Through clubbed together to create a festival in California called Friends Fest to benefit the band.
Friends Fest, that's so cute.
I know! In March 2016, Zach posted a video of him taking his first steps in over 4 months with the help of a walker.
God.
It's like none of them could walk, basically, after it. That same month, Vigil posted about finding out that his ankle bone was infected, meaning he needed IV antibiotics twice a day for 6 weeks to clear the infection before he could start the other surgeries he's needed.
God.
Like, we're now in March.
Yeah.
Which is 4 months later. And it's kind of like they feel like they're improving and then there's like a setback.
Yeah.
And then they feel like, you know, they're getting somewhere and then a setback again. Like, they're only starting to walk again months later.
God.
And then Andrew posted a video of him doing physio and trying to walk on his remaining leg. So there's this part of the podcast, and yeah, I probably should have put a trigger warning at the start, but I'm going to put a trigger warning here for the injuries that the band sustained.
Oh,
because
no.
So Andrew, the drummer, had in total around 51 injuries.
Mm-hmm.
He had a right leg deglovement.
Oh no.
If you know what that is, I won't explain. Don't Google it, probably. He got a traumatic brain injury, a shoulder injury, which is called a slap tear, which is usually gotten by what are they called? Pitchers? The people who throw the balls in baseball. And then he got complex regional pain syndrome, which is a type of nerve pain in his right arm, which meant he lost mobility in his hand and has the sensation of pins and needles shooting up into his middle finger constantly.
No, I'll just chop my finger off.
And he actually said that, like, even though he lost his leg, he said the hardest part was actually, like, his hand being painful all the time. He was, like, was worse than losing his leg.
Oh, God.
So he also got a hip fracture, several broken ribs, a fracture to his upper middle spine, and that broken bone severed some nerves in his back. So the fracture in his spine, the doctor actually said to him, if that was, like, one pinky finger closer to the other side, he would have been paralyzed.
Okay.
So he actually feels really lucky that that was the extent of his 51 injuries. So singer Vigil tore his ACL. The meniscus in his knee was destroyed. He broke his left ankle, his back. He's missing a part of the flesh from his back, around 8 inches long. And he had to have a skin graft on his elbow. He was unconscious for a month after the accident and he got a brain injury.
Oh, God.
So he said he remembers nothing, that he was on the bus. He banged his head as soon as the bus crashed.
Yeah.
And he was out for a month.
God, imagine that happening to you. Like,
yeah, he was just gone. But his girlfriend Kim explained how when he recovered, he was a different person. Like, when he woke up, he said when she went in to see him, he was like a child.
Mm-hmm.
He kept putting his arms up for, like, her to pick him up. Literally, oh, like a child.
So sad.
I know, so sad. And they didn't know if he would ever recover. Now he has. He says he's like 90%. He said there's still, like, sometimes he forgets words and there's, like, still something. But, like, I've seen his videos on Instagram and stuff now and, like, you wouldn't know.
Yeah.
But he said he's only like 90%. He had to do all these, like, it's like physio but for your brain.
Mm-hmm.
So he has to do all these, like, word memory games and, like, word association games and, like, little puzzles.
Yeah.
And he said he just used to do them constantly in the hospital to try and get it back.
Yeah.
And it's worked, but he said he had problems remembering words. So, like, he'd want to say to the nurse, like, I want to change my pillow around. But he'd be like, I want to change my...
You just can't imagine that.
You know, and then he'd say something, he'd be like, helmet.
Yeah.
You know, but he meant pillow.
Like, you get that feeling where you're like, what's that word? Like, and you can't think of it. Imagine that being, like, constant.
Yeah, yeah. But in a way, he said he missed everything. He missed Andrew losing his leg. He missed, like, finding out about... Well, he obviously found out when he woke up, but, like, he missed a lot of the recovery of some of his friends because he was out for a whole month. So in his ankle, he lost cartilage. And when he walked, it was bone grinding on bone.
No.
Mm-hmm.
No.
And then he got a bone infection. And he ended up having to get a fusion in his ankle, which means that his foot no longer goes up and down. It only goes slightly to the right and left.
Weird.
So he can walk now and he's no longer in pain, but he can't jump, run, or, like, have any kind of impact on his foot.
Ah, who needs to run? It's fine.
But he said he's so happy because it means there's no pain when he walks now.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was actually watching a video on his Instagram yesterday of him walking because he said that if you look closely, you can still tell that he walks funny because obviously his ankle doesn't bend, so it's kind of like that. But, like, you really wouldn't notice unless you look really closely. And Zach, they found blood in his lungs 2 years after the accident as he had such intense bruising. He broke 2 ribs on the left, fractured a vertebrae in his lower back, and 60 to 70% of his pelvis was completely shattered.
Oh.
And it took 18 hours of surgery to put it back together.
Oh my God. How do people... Sorry. Can we just have a shout out to the people who did that for 18 hours?
Yeah, the, like, surgeons.
What legends.
It's like doing a little jigsaw, must be. His left hip socket was shattered in 5 places. His right femur snapped completely. And his left foot was crushed to the point that it was dangling. And then that he eventually lost those, like, two... It's the two little toes on his foot.
Oh.
Chris fractured both of his ankles as well as midway on his foot. He also dislocated his foot in the middle, which is an injury usually seen in horse riders from, like, stirrups.
Oh, yeah.
So if the horse lands on you, then the, like, foot kind of snaps in half around the stirrup. But it's such a weird injury that in the hospital, they didn't have a doctor who could, like, help him.
Oh, God.
Now, he went to a different hospital after this and they did manage to fix it. But, like, the hospital in Texas, they were like, oh dear. sorry, babe, I can't help you there.
I can do an 18-hour surgery, but nope, not this one.
He had a left ankle fracture, which was worse than they originally thought, and the joint was shattered. And it's similar to Vigil that the bone was grinding on bone, and now his foot only goes up and down.
Same as
the other time. Well, no, the other guy, it only goes left and right a little bit. Oh, this one is so only a little bit up and down.
Put them together and they one full foot.
And then he got serious depression to a point, there was an interview with his wife that I heard, that... she used to go to work and he would just stay at home and he wouldn't talk to anybody, wouldn't talk to her. He just was in such a bad place that when she came home from work, she used to run in and run down to the basement, where, like, where he was hanging out, to make sure he was alive.
Oh,
because she did, she was sad. Just waiting for the day she came home and he wasn't. Yeah. Like, that's how bad it was. And he also developed a fear of flying, which I thought was really interesting because it was a bus crash.
Yeah.
But he said the sensation of turbulence was the same sensation of, like, the bus gliding to a stop in the crash.
No.
And he said he has friends who are pilots. He said he's been on YouTube. He's looked at videos about turbulence and he knows it's safe.
Yeah.
But he can't. It's the sensation of it. Oh. He, like, has a panic attack. And he also obviously does not much like getting the bus. Getting on a bus after that. And then finally, Jim had a double broken ankle, cuts and bruises, chipped teeth and a broken jaw. He had the least life-changing physical injuries, but he got serious mental health issues afterwards. He does a lot of the tour managing as well.
Mm-hmm.
And he would always take the bunk closest to the front because he'd have to, like, talk to the driver and, like, do different things. And it was, like, the least disturbing to everyone if he was near the front.
Mm-hmm.
But when they got on this bus, it was, like, set up a little bit differently to other buses they had been on. He said to Vigil, "Do you want to sleep in this one because it's a little bit bigger?"
Oh.
And then Vigil was the one who was, like, unconscious for a month.
Yeah.
And everything. So he felt really bad. Like, that should have been me, kind of way. And then he also, because he was doing the tour managing stuff, he also chose what time that they departed. And he said he was so in his head that he was like, what if I had a set a half an hour earlier? What if I had a set a half an hour later? Okay, maybe the tire was always going to pop, but maybe the truck wouldn't have been there. Yeah. And just, like, playing this in his head constantly, he, like, really suffered with his mental health because of it. That was their injuries. And I think that's insane.
That is insane. I'm like, how are they still alive?
How they all managed to survive is insane.
Yeah.
The story really that struck me, obviously the biggest story, is Andrew losing his leg.
Mm.
And he was in the hospital and they were trying to save it. Then it got really infected. It was turning into sepsis.
Mm.
To the point that, like, several of the band members and Andrew's dad said, when they walked into the room, they could smell the infection.
No.
And then the doctors were like,
yeah,
he could die.
Yeah.
So we need to take the leg. And the, like, decision kind of had to be made. Andrew's dad had to sign the papers to say take his leg. And the whole time Andrew was in a coma. So he was waking up to not having a leg.
Yeah.
Which is insane.
Yeah.
And his dad obviously knew what being a drummer was to him and everything, and how much the leg meant, like, more so than for a lot of other people.
Yeah.
That actually sounds like such a legend, but it was really hard on him.
Yeah, I can imagine.
So later in March 2016, during a Warped Tour announcement live stream, it was announced that the Ghost Inside would play Warped Tour 2017.
How? I just don't get it. How?
I just love their spirit. They're like, you know what? Let's just go play Warped Tour. Yeah, None of us can walk.
Who needs
to walk? Next year, we're going to play Warped Tour.
Yeah.
I love that. A band had never been announced so early before, and they were the first band announced for that year. The following day, Chris Davis, formerly of the band Texas in July, was announced as an official member of the band after touring with them since the previous year. So, like, obviously Chris was in the accident with them and everything.
Yeah.
So I feel like they had to, like, we've been through a lot together. I feel like we need to make you official. In April 2016, Stray From the Path recorded and released a song called Talking Tragedy and donated all proceeds to the Ghost Inside.
Oh, why is everyone so nice?
I know. Like, scrolling through their Instagrams from that time, all it is like them shouting out different people who were helping them. Yeah. But they were also really cute as well. Like, nearly all of the guys on their own, like, private Instagrams were posting, oh, hey, like, our friends' band, whatever, have a new song out today. You should listen to it. And, you know, just promoting their friends, seeing as they couldn't make their own music.
Yeah.
It's just really sweet. That same month, Andrew posted a video of himself walking with his new prosthetic leg.
Aww.
He has one of those, like, little robot legs that Indy really wants. In May 2016, Zach posted to Instagram looking back at the accident. He said, "Then I look back at the worst day of my life. We've kept a lot of photos to ourselves. These are a few that show how bad it really was." And, like, these photos are bad of, like, the crash.
Yeah.
Like, it's insane. You can kind of see how they got the injuries that they got when you see these pictures. "It's been just a bit over 6 months, but it has flown by. I'm not looking for sympathy here, just reflecting. I was one of the few who was awake when the accident happened, and other than little bits of dozing in and out, I remember every bit of it like it was yesterday. Beyond grateful for the people who survived and always thinking of those who didn't. The worst part was waiting for help to show up, assuming that some of my friends didn't make it and not knowing if I would myself. After I was considered stable, I found out that with the injuries I sustained, I was very close to death. Had the helicopter not been there when it was, that could have been the end. We're all making progress with the help of each other, our families, and all of you. Learning to walk again is a trip. Literally. Haha. Don't take life for granted. You never know what lies around the corner. Thanks for the love and support. You're the fuel to my fire. P.S. Regardless of how extreme injuries were and mental states, we will be back. See if an accident fucking stops me. It won't.
I feel really bad now when I complain about anything.
This has like made me think about my whole life. So at the end of May, Jonathan posted that one of the screws from his ankle broke through the skin and he was due to go for surgery the next day to replace all of his hardware to prevent further bone infections.
Oh God, it just never ends.
So he stepped out of the shower and in the corner of his eye, he was like, what's that? Like in the mirror? And it was the screw coming out of his ankle. Just out through the skin.
No.
That's insane. I didn't know that could happen. Thankfully, you don't have any, metal inside me, but, now I'm scared. He said it was disheartening as it was delaying his recovery and meant he was further away from walking by himself. Oh. In July 2016, The Ghost Inside won Most Dedicated Fan Base at the 2016 APMA Awards, and it was the first time all five members of the band had been together since they were in hospital in Texas.
Oh, so cute.
And just Most Dedicated Fan Base as well is so cute. In August, Zach posted an Instagram update saying he was devastated to discover that his femur hadn't healed at all and had slipped under the radar when he was in hospital. He advised that he had to get two more surgeries. And they also found out that he had a hernia, so they'd have to operate on that as well. And then he would need to restart physio all over again. So it is. It's just setbacks and setbacks. And they're being so positive and it's so sad. So on the 1 year anniversary of the accident, Andrew posted, "A year ago today was the worst day of my life, but it was also the first day of my new life. I look at it all differently now. After we were given a one-up, I see things in a different light. It's important to not sweat the small petty things in life. You need to enjoy what you have. Tell your family and friends how much you love them. Those are the things that really matter. I can't stress enough how true that is. Today, I'm not looking back and thinking about what happened and I'm not asking, why me? Instead, I'm smiling and laughing while being thankful that my friends and I got to see another year. Keeping in my thoughts the drivers who unfortunately didn't make it that day. I couldn't even imagine going through something like this without my family, friends, and all of you by my side. I truly do mean that from the bottom of my heart. The amount of support has been unlike anything I've ever seen before."
I'm gonna cry. So cute.
It's so cute. But again, it's like they're just so positive.
Yeah.
They're just so happy. In February 2017, Jonathan announced that they would not be able to perform a Warped Tour. And Warped Tour stated that they would hold the band's spot for whenever they were well enough to play. Then, of course, Warped Tour stopped happening after that.
Oh, yeah.
So that's kind of sad.
That is sad. But maybe it's a good thing they never played Warped Tour because we'd probably be saying they're perverts.
On April 17th, 2018, so the following year, the band held their first band practice since the accident. This is 2.5 years after the bus crash.
Wow. Can you imagine?
And on April 30th, they made a statement stating, yes, there is a future.
Cute.
They then started a weekly update on their Instagram where one member took over the band's social media pages per week to do a member chat Monday to share insights, personal progress, and behind the scenes of what the band were doing. And they were really wholesome and cute as well.
Wholesome was the word that came into my head. They're also wholesome.
Yeah. They're just like, hey, it's Vigil. I'm just hanging out today. Whatever. If you want to ask me any questions, come over to Twitter and ask whatever you want and all. I'll be online all day if you need me.
So cute.
They're really cute. This is my favorite part. Spoiler. At the end of May 2018, drummer Andrew posted on the Ghosts Inside page saying, "This is something I've been excited to share for a very long time. My dad is quite the handyman and came up with this great idea. Playing drums with a prosthetic leg just wasn't working out. The timing was way too off. There was a latency. It was awkward and clunky. My dad had a vision of designing me a device where I didn't need to attach my prosthesis at all. This way there is no weight my limb has to lift, which eliminates fatigue and gives me a far better action when striking the pedal. With that said, I still have a long way to go before I get it 100% down, but it's absolutely the right direction to go in terms of playing as close to my full potential as possible. My mom coined the name for this device, so we've been calling it the hammer." It is so cool. It's like a pedal that he uses his limb to...
That's insane.
Because his dad said because he signed off on him removing his leg, from that time he was like, I need to find a way that my son can play drums again.
No, stop.
And his dad worked in I think in car mechanics or something like that. Yeah. So I was obviously handy.
Yeah.
And he worked on this and made him something that he could play drums again.
So cute.
And all the comments are hashtag Larry and all.
Oh, Larry, we love you.
We love Larry. Yeah. He's so cute. And when he was in hospital and he had to sign the papers to say that they had to remove Andrew's leg, his dad, Larry, turned around to the doctor and was like, can you take my leg off too so he doesn't have to wake up and go through this alone?
No, I'm okay. I'm actually, that's it. I'm done. I'm done. Nope. Mm-mm.
Hashtag Larry.
I'm so sorry. I thought your music was shit.
In January 2019, a fan on Twitter asked if they were working on new music, and the band shared a photo of them in the studio. In February, they announced a return show for July 13th in the Shrine in LA, and the tickets sold out within 4 minutes.
Well, I'd say so.
The band were absolutely blown away by this. They thought it was a big enough capacity venue that they were like, hopefully it sells out, obviously. Mm. But, you know, we've got a couple of months. Like, in that time, hopefully everyone gets a ticket that wants one. And 4 minutes, they were gone.
Wow.
And they were just, sorry, what? It's like when we finally announce we're doing a live podcast show and it sells out instantly. And we're like, oh my God, like, I can't believe it. Like, we always knew it was coming, but like, can't believe it.
Blown away.
So during the show, Vigil said he was not sure if that would be the Ghosts Inside's last ever show or if they'd play 100 more. But he did announce that the band was working on new music. In a video update in August, the band stated that they plan to perform some one-off shows at some point in 2020, but stressed they're not going on tour. Later that month, they posted a photo on their Instagram of them in the studio. The caption just said, album number 5.
Dun, dun, dun.
So that show, it turned out, it sold out so fast that what they did was they moved it outside the venue to an outdoor thing so that they could sell 3,000 more tickets.
Nice.
And they were gone in a minute.
Nice.
Insane.
Fair awesome, yeah.
But they had in their head, they were like, we don't know if we can ever go on tour again because like they're obviously in so much pain from recovering and stuff.
Why would you ever want to?
Yeah, it's not like, oh, we're better now, so we can just go on tour. Yeah. Like, these are things that, like, obviously take years to recover from. So they had in their head, they were like, we want to play one show and we want to release one new album because we don't want the last thing we did before the crash to be the last thing we ever did as a band.
Yeah.
We want to do something else after the crash. And that was their goal. But then after they did that show and it was so popular, they were like, okay, we'll do a few more, like, single shows.
Yeah.
They couldn't go on tour. They're all in bits, sure.
Yeah, exactly. Literally.
They were in bits.
Like, 18 bits.
In April 2020, they released their first new music since the accident, a single called Aftermath, which they refer to as a tribute to the community that supported them, stood by them, and raised them from the ashes. They also announced that their forthcoming album would be called The Ghost Inside, and stated that it's proof positive that the strong survive and the beat does go on. The music video for Aftermath opens with footage of the bus crash before showing Vigil performing at what appears to be the site of the accident, interspersed with images of Andrew recovering from his injuries.
Oh, stop again.
The video is insane. I actually saw this before. That's how I knew they were in a bus crash and stuff. But like, now that I know the story, I'm obsessed with this. In June 2020, they released their self-titled fifth studio album through Epitaph Records. It was recorded in the Audio Compound in Orlando, Florida, and Graphic Nature Audio in Belleville, New Jersey. It was produced by Will Putney, guitarist of deathcore band Fit for an Autopsy, and Jeremy McKinnon again.
What a terrible name.
I feel like I've heard their name before.
Terrible name.
The album has been referred to as a return to form and has drawn comparisons to Returners and Dear Youth. Critics praise their technical skills and positive lyrics. It was not as commercially successful in the US as previous releases, reaching only number 141 on the Billboard 200. It made it into the top 10 in both Australia and Germany. Unlike most of the band's songs, Pressure Point notably uses profanity.
Oh,
I thought this was really interesting because I never copped that the songs don't swear.
Yeah.
But one song does. And the band generally avoids featuring profanity in their songs, but Jim stated that sometimes you're just so fed up that nothing less than a big loud fuck will get the job done. I agree.
I know what he means.
Of the album title, Jonathan explained that the original intent was to choose a title which accurately summarised the events the band members had gone through in the previous 5 years, but nothing they thought of was satisfactory. I always think when a band releases a self-titled album, I'm like, that's just lazy. Why could you not think up a name for the album?
Mm.
But I just feel like for this,
it's very fitting.
It's perfect.
Yeah.
Just calling it themselves. After all they've been through, after everything, I think it's really cool that they're just like, no, this is us. This is the Ghost Inside. What did you think of some?
I feel really bad that didn't really think much about it now, to be honest.
Yeah, but like when I listen to it now,
I'll have a different outlook on it, but I was like, meh.
Like it literally starts and they're like, talks about rising from the ashes, triumph over tragedy. Then there's the second song in the album is called Still Alive. And like there's a chant in it with like, still alive, still alive. And now listening to it, I'm like, go on, lads.
If you listen to that with no context, it's just kind of like, oh, whatever. Like, triumph over tragedy, whatever.
I feel like if I was at a gig and they played that, I think I'd cry, honestly.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, go on, lads, I love you so much. So the album's cover artwork is a collage of images of fans' tattoos dedicated to the band.
Oh.
It's kind of cool. In a 4-star review, NME wrote, having survived the kind of ordeal no one should ever have had to face, it would have been understandable, hell, perfectly justified, if the metalcore band had turned in a dark, bitter record that reflected their most traumatic period. Instead, after 4 years of intense rehabilitation, the Ghost Inside self-titled fifth album is a towering statement of positivity, transforming pain into catharsis, determination, and hope. I think that sums it up really well.
Yeah. Could have given them 5 stars, but okay, fine, whatever.
The day after the album release, they announced that they'd parted ways with longtime bassist Jim Reilly, following an alleged racial comment he supposedly made in 2015.
Oh, no.
Isn't that insane?
After all that shit they've gone
after
through.
Going through all of that together and just being like, sorry, Jim, you're out.
Was 2015 the year the accident happened?
Yeah.
Well...
Well, it was November 2015, so presumably it was before the accident, like...
Well, like, how bad was it now?
Okay, so the band put out a statement, and I will say, before I even say this, one of the best statements I've ever heard. Okay. Now, I know we're not talking about sexual predators like we are in most episodes.
Yeah.
Still, it's a really good statement.
Okay.
The Ghost Inside was born from a scene of forward-thinking, understanding, and progressiveness. Our music and message has always been one of hope and finding that light at the end of the tunnel. Racism and bigotry of any kind stifle that journey to light. It closes and locks doors that need to be broken open. We've decided to part ways with bassist Jim Reilly. While we didn't hear these words spoken directly from his mouth, we did hear mutterings of the incident. At the time, we thought this to be just a rumour, but it offended and hurt a community. A community we are meant to bring together. We should have spoken up back then and we didn't. We should have dug deeper. We acknowledge that we were silent. We are self-educating and growing and learning as individuals. We're here to say that we as a band fully condemn racism and support the Black community in the fight against systemic racism.
Excellent.
I think took ownership, got rid of Jim, was like, nope, that's not what we're about.
But I just feel real bad for Jim.
So listen to Jim's statement. The Ghost Inside began selling a charity t-shirt with the proceeds benefiting the National Association for the Advancement of Coloured People, or the NAACP, and Rashad Jackson, the drummer from the band Brace War, called out Jim for using the N-word in 2015. And at the time of the accusations, Rashad threatened in a tweet that if Jim remained in the band, he would make sure the Ghost Inside never play a show. I mean, I still also feel it's a bit extreme, considering that they've just been through this accident, are just coming out the other side of it, are just starting to play again, and this guy's like, I'll make sure you never play another show.
Yeah.
It's a lot.
Also, no, I just won't go there. Let's go. Okay, keep going.
So Jim's statement, he said, Rashad called me out in 2015. I called him, he put the screws to me. I deserved it, and I apologised to him. He told me that wasn't good enough, and he was right. It's shameful and fucking embarrassing. I present myself as someone who gives a shit about progressive movements and ideas, and I was not living up to that. Because of that conversation, I had to take a big fucking look in the mirror and realize and recognize a lot of bullshit that I was selling myself. I made too many excuses for being brought up without exposure to the Black experience, and I should have been better. I make a conscious effort to purge stuff about myself that sucks, that still sucks when I find it, and to be mindful that I'm just a passenger on someone else's ship in any movement related to Black lives. He concluded, I'm sorry. I know that's not enough. I'm going to keep doing the work. That might still not be enough. I'm going to do it anyway.
Like, I just feel so sorry for him.
I know. And, like, his statement is amazing as well.
I shouldn't feel sorry for him in the sense that, like, he shouldn't have used those words. And being in a big accident does not condone your actions previous to it. But I feel like maybe that was punishment enough.
Yeah.
You know?
I feel like the world does change so quickly, and I feel like we all like have said things in the past that were bad, or like 100%. Done things in the past that are bad. And I feel like 5 years later, bringing it up and being like, you did that. People change a lot in 5 years.
Yeah. And like I said, like, have they not been punished enough?
Yeah. So the situation got even messier when it was discovered that Rashad himself had used homophobic slurs online in the past.
Ah, no. Well, I hope he fucking left the band.
So he wasn't perfect either.
Please tell me he left the band.
I doubt it.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
In an interview that September, the band claimed that they reinstated Jim after determining that it was the wrong call to remove him from the group. So he came back.
What? Why'd you put me through that?
I know, because I had to go through it.
For fuck's sake.
And when I tell you, this is the only piece of, like, drama or, like, controversy I could find about the band. This was the worst thing that they ever did.
It's not really awkward, then, that you have to be like...
Well, the guys were like especially because of everything they'd been through with them, they were like, you did something... 5 years ago, before so much life-changing stuff has happened, and like, they love him and they know him, and they were like, we know that's not you.
Yeah, but why did they get rid of him then?
They said they kind of acted rashly, and they kind of were like, okay, we have to do the right thing. And there was pressure obviously from fans and like from online, and they were like,
I just feel like if you and me were in a really bad accident, touch wood, and then somebody was like, Danny used this word 6 years ago, I'd be like, and like, she, whatever.
Like, I know she's not racist. Like, I know she's not like that.
I wouldn't be like, okay, get rid of her, and then be like, actually, sauce. Maybe that was the wrong idea. I just feel so, like, trauma bonded to you that I wouldn't want. Anyway, okay.
Yeah, yeah. No, but they took him back. And to be fair, like Jim said, obviously he was happy to go back to the band. But he was like, if it meant that the band couldn't play anymore and like lost shows and lost fans because of what I said, he's like, I would have rather leave the band than come back.
Fair.
So they are all back, which I'm very happy for. So in August 2020, they released a 4-part podcast series with Defiance called 1333 Days about their story. So this is where I got so much of my information, and it is amazing if you want to absolutely traumatize yourself and listen to something very intense.
No, thank you.
Like listening to the guy's own words tell the story.
Nope.
It's insane. And 1333 Days relates to how many days it was between the crash and then that gig at the Shrine when they came back.
Figured.
Which is cool. And they also have the first song on that album is called 1333.
Hmm.
So they were booked for a number of festivals and a one-off show in London, but COVID meant a lot of these dates were cancelled or postponed. In March 2023, they kicked off a UK tour and then toured around Europe.
Oh,
they went on tour. See, that documentary podcast was 2020, so that's kind of like the last I heard. So now, obviously, we're still another three, four years on from that. Yeah. So they, in July and August of last year, they went on tour in the US supporting Under Oath, and then they went on a South American tour at the start of this year. Since last year, they've released 4 new songs from their forthcoming album and announced their 6th album, Searching for Solace, which is set for release on April 19th.
Well done to them.
And that's it. That's the story.
I feel real sad that I didn't like them, you know? And I still don't. As in, will I ever be like, I'm going to go listen to The Ghosts Inside? No.
I have been listening to them. And I think when you listen to the music with the context,
yeah,
it definitely like it a bit more, like, helps. Because they're just so positive in the songs and everything. And they're like...
To be fair, it's not that I didn't like there's some bangers on it, and I was listening to it and I was like, that's a good song, but it was just like, I think it's a lot sometimes when we have to listen to like the 5 albums.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, it is, definitely.
Fair play to them.
I know, I just love just the positivity and the fact that they're back out there touring again. They just went back to it, like.
And you know what? I feel like us recording this episode has been a reflection on the journey as well, because it's taken us a long time to get here.
We've had like a calamity of an episode. We have had to stop recording 8,000 times and look after my child.
Poor
and
little Indy is not well.
She's not well, but she's calling me every 2 minutes. So this is just pause, go again, pause, go again. So this could be the most disjointed album episode of all time.
That's why Danny has lost the ability to say words. Yeah,
I can't even think. I'm tired and it's been a lot. But we got here. So what is your song?
Hang on, you talk there now because I need to... find them.
So my song on repeat is going to be Still Alive, because it does, it gets me every time when they're chanting Still Alive.
Well, I just feel like I'm boring now because mine are just boring. Where's the song?
I don't know if I know my song to skip.
I do. It's the first song on the first album.
You don't like that one?
Because I wanted to skip it. Mine is going to be the one with Point North, but I can't remember what it's called.
As your song on repeat, I knew it was going to be.
Did you?
I absolutely knew. There's definitely a song that stood out to me that I was like, okay, I'll put that as my song to skip. Now I don't know what it is.
That's okay, you love them all.
I kind of do. I just think they're so nice and I don't want to skip any songs.
Fair play, son. What age are they? Do we know?
So they were 20 when they first came out, they said, or like in around 20, which would be, make them born in 85. So they're around like 40 kind of thing.
Yeah.
And like any of their Instagrams are so wholesome. They're always just like out with their kids or like...
I'm so glad no one's a pervert.
Oh yeah. And they're all like real thankful for their significant others for being there for them through the crash and everything.
Mm.
Yeah. Very wholesome.
Imagine when they broke up with them after the crash. That'd be awful.
I am a massive supporter of this band now after reading all this. I just think... I just love their attitudes and how positive they are about everything, honestly.
I would go to their show.
Yeah,
I mean, sorry, do you know what, I'd actually feel bad going to their show because I'd be like, I'm just wasting a ticket for someone who probably loves them. But I mean, what I'm trying to say is I would support them.
Yeah. So what band are we supporting or not supporting next time?
You're
Claire,
you're gonna hate me.
Oh, fab.
Do you have any ideas?
No, I have no idea who you're gonna choose.
So I've had like a load of bands there. I'm like, I want to do them because to me they're just the bands that like define that time period.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everyone knows something to do with them. I just didn't want to go there because like that's like 20, 30 years worth of music that I just don't want to go into. But I've done it now, so sorry. It's Sum 41.
Okay. I think that's going to be an interesting one. They were actually on my list to do.
Yeah.
I feel like Derek has a lot of
stuff. He does. But also, it's like bangers.
Yeah.
They do have bangers. Like everyone knows that song. So, and I'm going to see them. So I was like, well, I have to listen to them anyway. So that's what we're going to do.
Okay, cool. Not no, so I'm bad. Interested. Like, yeah. I know they have a lot of albums and a lot of music to get through.
They have like eight, to be honest. But you probably know the first three at least.
I don't think I've ever listened to like one of their albums fully through.
They're all pretty much the same song on repeat.
That's how I feel about them as a band, honestly.
Yeah.
But maybe they'll change by the next time
probably
you record.
Probably not, but because I think they've announced they're like breaking up now. So
yeah, it's this. Like their final tour.
Yeah.
I haven't got a ticket, and I have that like FOMO. You'll so I'm like, I'll never ticket. Be able to get to see them, even though I've never wanted to. But
you do know. You might after...
Maybe I will. Yeah. Maybe I'll be buying a ticket to Sum 41 after this.
Yeah. Guys, let us know what you think of The Ghost Inside.
Yes, go support them, just because they seem like such lovely men.
Such lovely men. Which, do you know what, is a rarity for us to say.
We don't
on
say
this
that
podcast.
Very often.
I don't think we ever say it.
Yeah.
Apart from Mike Shinoda, because yeah, we love him.
But you can support us by following our Instagram. That would be good.
Yeah.
So we're Foundations of Emo on Instagram and TikTok, and we're Foundations Emo on Twitter. But thank you for listening.
Okay, thanks, bye.